Okay, I just want to say one word about talks themselves. That talks are very traditional. They've kind of been going on a few thousand years. This tradition of Dharma talk. And they are, in one hand, a way of understanding the practice and understanding the Buddhist teaching. But in another way, they're a way to stop our habit of business as usual, like shigra, just to stop the mind and ask existential questions, questions that wake us up. And that's the tradition. So if there are questions that arise that you really don't understand, and they're not related to your experience, because there's people here, this is their first retreat, it doesn't matter. Just to kind of be there with the question, or something that you don't understand, or something a bit mysterious, existential. Which reminds me, the other day I was mazeh inside emailing, kind of busy on the computer, and my granddaughter, Nina, came running up in the middle and said, "If God made the world, who made God?" Like, email stopped, everything stopped, life stopped. So we can regard the talks a little bit like that. Just stop business as usual. Okay, and open. So the title of the talk itself is mysterious a little bit. The title of the talk is "Does the River Sweep Us Away, or Are We the River?" Does the river sweep us away, or are we the river? And it comes from a story in the which is a kind of a metaphor, image, mashal in the Buddhist text that says life is a river, and we are like a boat on the river. We are in a boat on the river, and the river sweeps us along, and we try and stop it. And there are branches hanging over the river, and as the boat is swept along by the river, we hold on to a branch to save us, but we can't. It's not strong enough. And so we hold another branch and hang on and try and stop this, and we can't. We have to let go, and another branch. So all along the river, we are trying to hold on to branches to save us from this river that seems to sweep us away, out of control. And so that's the image, that's an image of life sweeping us away. And there's another image which is quite similar, which is also kind of scary in a deep way, which says that as long as we are under a spell, kishuf, with whatever comes through the senses, ears, eyes, mouth, touch, we are in a spell. It is, we are excited, or we are taken over by the senses. As long as we're like that, we are swept away by the tides of life. So it's a strong image, similarly, of just being swept, because we want this, we want that, we like this, we don't like that. Our senses are all the time busy holding on to things, wanting things, not wanting things, and we get swept away. We can look at it like we get swept away if we're on automatic pilot, tayas automati, just coping with life. Itmodadut, just coping, just surviving. And we're swept. There's a quote from one of the texts about this that says, in all directions, everywhere, there are things you know and recognize. They are above, they are below, they're around, they're inside. Leave them. Do not look on the senses for rest or for relief, hakala. Do not let consciousness stay on the products of existence, on things that come and go. To me, it's, maybe you don't understand the English so well, but it, to me it's very powerful. That is, consciousness is busy not with existence, but with the results of existence. Namely, what arises above, what were my senses, the products, the results of existence. I want this, I don't want that. It's the world, it's other people, it's relationships, it's what I need, it's politics, it's wars, it's conflicts, it's struggle. Big drama going on right now in the UK. And of course, being very English in my bones, I'm really interested in what's going on there. And in some way, I feel it's one of these things that swept sweeping people away. Actually, the pain in England is generational. The young people have had their future stolen away by some old right-wing guys. The young people are suffering from what's happening now because their future has been contracted by fear. Most of them, almost all of them, voted to stay inside the European Union. Anyway, that's just an example. But can we, in here we go back to something mysterious and existential. Can we be the river rather than be swept away by the river? Can we be the river instead of being swept along by this river of life? It reminds me of a Zen instruction. When you look at water, don't look at water as a human being looking at water. Look at water as water looks at water. Can we be the river? And it means taking a point of view of life rather than a point of view, nukuda mabat, nukuda hityakhsut, a point of reference, instead of me and what it is that I need and I want and what's coming through the senses, taking a point of view or a point of reference of life itself. That's radical. It is completely radical. It's dramatic. It shifts the whole of existence. If we are the river and not just being taken away by the river. And that's what we're doing here in a way, and that's what the teaching is about. And the truth is, all real, deep, authentic spiritual teachings will say the same thing, that the point of view needs to be bigger than me. The point of, and in the Buddhist teaching, it's very much the point of view of life rather than the point of view of Elohim or a sacred being. That's the Buddhist way. But it's something there which is similar. We can enjoy it. A little bit, we're touching it here. When we just breathe, we just feel the body, we just feel the earth underneath our feet, we just listen to the birds singing in the trees. Somewhere or other we relax the point of view of me and expand the boundary to include the world. And in a little bit, 5%, 5%, we are the world when we experience that. So we can enjoy that. We can be the river and swim in this river. What does it? What is it that is our main power that can shift the view from the me to the view from life, with life, swimming in the river? And that's awareness. An awareness from the mind and awareness from the heart. When I talk about awareness, I don't make distinction between awareness of the mind and awareness of the heart. Talking about both powers. Awareness, even on the simplest place, the breath as it comes can show us this. I want to read a poem by Rumi, which gives this as an example. Just in one breath, how we can get a sense of letting go of the me that is the middle of everything and just experience breathing, being, living as itself, for itself. So Rumi writes, in every breath, if you are the center of your own desires, you will lose the grace of the divine. But if in every breath you blow away your self-importance, the ecstasy of love will arrive. In every breath, if you're the center of your own thoughts, the sadness of autumn will fall on you. But if in every breath you strip naked, just like a winter, the joy of spring will grow from inside. All the impatience comes from pushing for gain, for your needs. Let go of the effort. Peace will arrive. The awareness, the heart-mind awareness, will shape our life. It shapes us. We are constructed by awareness. We are created by our awareness. There is a Buddhist phrase that says, what you pay attention to, that you become. What you pay attention to, that you will become. We are constructed by it. So awareness is our tool for freedom, to unconstruct, to deconstruct. And here I want to say a few words about mindfulness, or sati in the Pali language. The awareness that frees us is a direct knowing, without distance of thinking about, without intermediate tivuch. It's knowing directly, just like some of the images we were using in the instructions, like feeling the wind on the cheeks, doesn't need thought about it. Or walking, you can only take a step in the present. You can't take a step in the future. You can't take a step in the past. When you're walking, there is only that step in the now. Doesn't need any thinking about, it's just knowing. That's mindfulness. It's shining the light on our lived experience right now. Miyadi, miyadiyut, immediately. And it wakes up, it shines the light and lights up places of darkness. It's like in the image, a candle going into a dark room will light the whole room, just a candle. Mindfulness lights up our dark places, the places of forgetting, the places where we don't know that we exist, the places that we're so busy with our missions in life, with being swept along on the river, we forgot to pay attention to our breath, to our life force, to our heart, to our universe, to the prana, to the chi energy, to the flow, to the freedom of the dance that is inside us and outside us, and we forgot. So mindfulness lights it up. And in a way, any object is fine for mindfulness. We've been concentrating here on breath and body in a very in a conscious way, being aware we're just here for 2 days together, and it's best in the middle of life, in order to stop the running, the business as usual, breath and body are really fine places to stop. So that's why we're concentrating on breath and body in this retreat so far. But everything is, we shine the light on everything, on thoughts, on feelings, on difficulties, on pain, on sleepiness, on ecstasy, on joy, on sadness, on tiredness, on confusion, on liberation. It's all raw material, but we take as for a wise choice. We, like the lotus in the pond, we say, let's take breath and body as a bit more important than all the other things right now. But all the other things of our existence are also the raw material, the places, the dark rooms that we light up with the light of mindfulness. When we do this, we notice what we're made of. We might see our mind is a total cacophonia. Our mind is just noise and cacophonia. But nothing is a problem if you light it up. If you see the mind as full of judgment, as full of criticism, as full of planning, as full of what am I going to do, what will happen, all the usual thoughts that race across the mind non-stop. When we shine the light of mindfulness on this mind and know, that's planning. That's criticism, judgment. That's just thoughts of wanting to run away from here. That's thoughts of anger. That's thoughts of anxiety, fear. We are not in the same place anymore. We've lit up our consciousness through awareness, and we see what's there. And when we see what's there, we are not trapped by it. We are not swept away by this consciousness. We're actually not swept. We're swept away if we don't do that, if we're just controlling us and we don't know it. As soon as we stop and look, we're back in charge. We are in a way master rather than servant of the mind. The big insight that is all the time with us, waiting for us to understand. The big insight is that when we look at the life process, this river passing through, we see it as basically free, dynamic, and passing by. And also not mine. It's a really, even if we get a little bit of that understanding, it stays with us and can lighten our life. Everything is passing through. Everything has a sell-by date, you know, like they put on the products in the shop. Take it off the shelf after 1 week. We take things pass off the shelf in 1 second. Everything moves, everything is dynamic. It means fundamentally we are not stuck, and we cannot be stuck because everything is moving and passing. So this sense of freedom and lightness that it gives us, when we see that everything, even if it seems such a heavy pattern, tavnit kol kach kasha, it is possible to see it, it is possible to light it up, it's possible to see that it's not really ours, it's possible to see that it passes by itself and it goes away. And this is helpful to us whether we are interested in a therapeutic purpose or in a spiritual journey. Same. It's why mindfulness has become so important in psychotherapy, in today's psychotherapy, with CBT and many other ways of doing psychotherapy, which are influenced by mindfulness. Just because of this kind of teaching, and as I was saying before, I do some workshops with my daughter, and she brings the CBT view, and I bring the Dharma view, and we're talking the same language. And it's about treating people with very serious obsessive thought, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, for example. And she's using the same language I'm using just now. Helping to someone with OCD, with a serious obsessive mental loop in the mind, helping them to shine the light on this loop in the mind and say, yes, I have a loop in the mind, it looks like this, but it's not the world, it's not real, and it passes and it changes and I can be with it, and that's therapeutic act. So mindfulness is for all of these places will always bring us this sense of being free from what it is that we can see. If we see it directly, we shine the light on it, we are not it. We have, in a way, taken ourselves out of the identification. Mindfulness isn't neutral. It isn't a being like a robot, a zombie. Even though maybe some of you have felt, well, walking outside, actually I'm a bit of a zombie. What am I doing here? Walking like a zombie. But it's not really like that. Mindfulness has in it kindness, and we already talked a lot about that. It has in it appreciation. The earth under our feet, the birds in the trees, the kindness of the staff who are cooking for us and working so hard. The sense of just kindness in this whole framework here. Nobody's pushing and nobody's demanding and nobody's forcing and nobody's giving kind of belief systems that you have to believe in. And there's a kindness in the whole way that of the teaching. So mindfulness has values, and one of them is kindness, one of them is appreciation. A sense that the world is not an enemy, but a friend. It's a major, major shift. It's a radical, radical shift. And from there, it leads to ethics and how to act in the world. Acting from mindfulness, acting from kindness, and acting from intimacy, knowing that the world is not against me. There is a word called apamada, which is actually used a bit similar to sati or mindfulness. And in Hebrew, Karen told me that the best Hebrew translation is eronut. And the English translation is, it needs a few words. It means to take care. It means to be careful. It means to be watchful of what's happening. It means to notice. And it has in it also this same sense of knowing what's right, knowing what's needed, knowing what's happening, what's the relationship going on. The last words of the Buddha before he died were, "Be an island to yourself and be watchful, wakeful, eronut, seriously, with effort or with determination." And it's a sense that being watchful, being awake to what's happening is really what saves us from being swept along in the automatic river of life, just taking us. This includes knowing when we don't know, what we don't know, understanding that we don't notice things. And I want to quote R.D. Lang. You know, this evening I've got lots of quotes. I just enjoy all these wise people bringing quotations. And R.D. Lang says, "The range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice. And because we fail to notice that we fail to notice, there is little we can do to change. Until we notice how failing to notice shapes our thoughts and deeds. So what he's saying is, when we know the way that we're on automat and we don't notice things, and how the result of that is painful sense of being on automat, at that moment that's already waking up. Then we notice, then we can change. Change is possible by waking up to the fact that we don't know, or that we didn't notice things. So it's okay to get that process of taking the candle into the dark room, knowing it's a dark room, and bringing the candle into the dark room and seeing what happens. Another way we can look, or we can describe the gradual process of day by day, year by year, of meditation, of mindfulness, of awareness. What grows in us is the sense of being the witness, edut, of being a witness to our life rather than a slave to it or a subject of it. This witnessing grows. And it's something behind, it's like the power of mind that is behind our practice. As we, it can be, we look at the breath, it can be the body, it can be the birds outside, it can be a sense of being alive, it can be walking down the street, it can be anything with we do with awareness, the witness develops. Witnessing becomes the main thing that happens in our life. To be Ed Hogen, we can describe it, a fair witness of our life. Our life may seem like really difficult because they're operat sabon. That, I mean, our life can feel like that, but it doesn't matter anymore, because actually our life is being a witness. A story we see from the place of witnessing is just a story. That's all it is. When we witness the stories that make our life, we're free of them. We can enjoy them. Maybe it's a good movie. Maybe it is operat sabon. Maybe it's a boring movie. Doesn't matter. But we're the witness. So we hold our life in our hands, in awareness. And the witnessing becomes our life. The consciousness itself becomes our life. Our awareness is the main thing in our life. And what arises moment by moment is just the content, just the things that arise by themselves. We don't have to worry about them. They just come and going. But the witnessing, the sense of presence, gets bigger and bigger the more we practice. I was asked sometimes about, sometimes I'm asked about mental power and power that comes with awareness. And indeed, we only use 10% of our mind. That's what the neurologists say. And meditation, according to science, certainly does increase the use of the mind and the extent with which we use our mind. It should give us, the witnessing does give us more power to be in charge of our mind, and it should give us capacity. Except I have a problem. It's never helped me to learn Hebrew. Doesn't mean that I don't want to do it, but I'm just noticing that in my case, in my brain, all the meditation I've done in my life has never helped me to learn Hebrew. So a complete failure. But it helped me to do so many other things. I was thinking about that because last December, a few months ago, I was in a monastery, a Buddhist monastery in the UK, and I was there for a short visit. And in a week, I wrote half a book, and that's done. And I just was thinking, as I was doing it, wow, this is power of mind. It just arose, appeared, and there it was. So, in my case, didn't work with Hebrew, but it certainly works in other areas of life, as power of life. Someone asked, Nisargadatta Maharaj, a non-dual Advaita master, about meditation. Why do we need to meditate? And he said, we know the outer world of sensations and actions, but of our inner world of thoughts and feelings, we know very little. The first purpose of meditation is to become conscious of and familiar with our inner life. But the ultimate purpose is to reach the source of life and the source of consciousness. And incidentally, practice of meditation affects deeply our character. We are slaves to what we do not know, and of what we know, we are masters. Whatever difficulties in ourselves, we discover and understand its causes and how it works. We overcome it just by the act of knowing. The unconscious dissolves when brought into the conscious. And the dissolving of the unconscious dissolving of the unconscious into the conscious releases energy, and the mind feels powerful and becomes quiet. When the mind is quiet, we come to know ourselves as the witness, the pure witness. We withdraw from the experience and the experiencer and stand apart in pure awareness, which is between and beyond both the experience and the experiencer. The witnessing, or the power to see what's really going on and be interested in that, is like being aware of the white page on which text is written. We're usually interested in just the writing on the page, but what is really important is to make that balance and become interested in the white page. That means the ground of our awareness on which things arise and disappear. Because there is a place like in the ocean, which is big, which is free, and we can live there. And watch the writing as it comes and goes, but not forgetting the page. And there's interesting, the word psyche, which we use only for the mind, in its original use, which is from the Greek, the word psyche means just that. It means the whole of the living, the life energy the power of life energy that's passing through us. So it's mind plus a lot more than that. It's power of life. Aliveness. Heartfulness. And some people, when they ask, what is the purpose of meditation? It's really there. It's the sense of being the river, being in the aliveness, being in the heartfulness, being free to contain and hold whatever arises in our life and passes away, and we stay steady, awake, aware, and free. And that is the purpose of all this practice. So, final sentence about this. The text that is a kind of a major text, and there's like thousands and thousands of Buddhist, early Buddhist texts, and they're in a way our authority. But the one that's perhaps more important or most important is Satipatthana Sutta. I'm just mentioning it because I recommend all of you to have a read of it. It's in Hebrew, it's on the site of Tovana, etc. But there it does describe how the first place, if you like, the Tachana Rishon, is the body for mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the body as a window, not just as a thing. The body that shows us life, the body that that we live inside. We're invited to be free inside this body. So there, and it goes through different stages: body, feelings, mind, etc. And one or final stage, or the fourth stage in the Satipatthana Sutta, is Dhamma, meaning mindfulness of Dhamma. And it really means mindfulness. Dhamma is what arises, the seeing of what arises and the nature of things as they really are. And so when we keep practicing, gradually our stream of consciousness of ordinary mind becomes replaced by Dhamma. So we become the Dhamma. It's not that being a witness, we watch and feel easier with the events of our life. We become the Dhamma. The Dhamma changes our consciousness. And we live from that place. And so some of us, again, we said it before, and some of us may feel, well, I want to meditate for experiences. And that's fine, there's no problem with that. But underneath the agenda, which is behind that, is that it actually changes our consciousness and we become the Dhamma, the truth. It is us. And we manifest it in our life. And the Dhamma in Satipatthana Sutta is described in many different ways or kinds of teaching that say what it is that is the Dhamma and how does it look. And one place that I just want to mention here, the Dhamma is often described as qualities of being. For example, the factors of awakening. We're like, there's seven factors of awakening. And these are kind of tools or powers which we manifest in the journey to awakening, to Nibbana. And there is investigation or chakira or exploring, which is what we're doing. There is joy. There is energy. There is calmness or peacefulness. There is samadhi, concentration. There is equanimity, steadiness, balance. And these are qualities. So as we meditate, we move from having experiences that we want to having to becoming these qualities. They manifest inside us. we become them. And that's living the Dhamma. And this is a lived experience rather than just experiencing things. So with that, I'd like to finish. And also, just to remind you that as we go out from this short retreat, which is one weekend, but if we understand some of the things here that I've been talking about, such as that the development of our life as a practitioner or our spiritual life is about letting these qualities of Dhamma shift our consciousness, then we become much less critical of whether I have a good meditation when I go back home or not, or whether my mind returns to cacophonia when I'm sitting at home in Kfar Saba or not. It isn't that that's the problem. That's not the issue. The issue is, in our life journey, are we gradually manifesting the qualities of Dhamma? Are we gradually manifesting insight, exploring, calmness, joy, steadiness, letting these qualities just grow in us by keep touching, keep being the river rather than being swept away by it?